हरिः ॐ सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
A mortar, a grinding stone, an oven, a water pot, and a broomstick are the five constant pieces of furniture in a household by which life is destroyed. By celebrating a religious sacrifice, a cultivator is absolved of all sins which he may have committed by tilling the ground, by felling the trees, or killing animals and insects. He who, even though a master of stocks of grains, does not give any to the Brahmins, should be branded as a Brahmana killer. By giving a sixth part of his crop to the king, a 21st part to the Brahmins, and a 13th part to the gods, the cultivator is exonerated from all sins. Yeah, so then this is the idea of when you're giving in donations, then this is... So a sixth part, it goes to the king. That's the general tax. As we'll see later, is that if it's times of distress for the king, they can charge up to 25%. Right? But this sixth part, which I think is around 16.5% or something percent, that's standard. But it can be increased up to there. So when the government goes beyond that, the problem is then you take on much more karma. So it's not advised, right? You know, it may get rid of the problem now, but then there's so much karma is taken on, and then you have all that to deal with. So,
yeah. Does that also go for the tax system of governments today?
Yeah, just normal thing is as you go up to 20. I mean, 16.5% is standard, and then you know 25% is if there's some difficulty. You know, like let's say times of war or other kinds of, let's say, you know, problems come up, then they can do that. But it also, we'll see later, is that this is what has grown and all that. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to other things, then the percentages are different. Like gold will be one thing, this one will be another. Because it depends upon how much profit is made. Right? Certain things you don't make that much profit off of, so the tax is less. Certain things you make more profit off of. With less endeavor, so then they're more. But like grains is a standard amount of work to go into and a standard return. Right? Does that make sense?
Yeah. Standard income tax in Denmark is 50%.
Yeah, so it's a bit high.
Heavy karma for the government.
Yeah, it means it's high, because the thing is then you have to, it means just taking this 6% or a quarter, you know, then just taking that much, you're already taking on that much of the karma. It means if you take a sixth, you get a sixth. Yeah. Right? When it says the king takes on 1/6 of the karma of the subjects, it's because he's taxing 1/6. If he taxes a quarter, he takes a quarter. If he taxes 50%, he takes 50%. But it says if you tax and don't protect, you take on 100%, even though your tax is less. Okay. So
But how is that to be understood? So if you take, I mean, if you're not protecting, then there's no karmic reaction for the population?
No, it means they have their own personal. I mean, they'll be purified to some degree, but it just means he'll get all the reaction like that. I'm not sure if that means that they get no reaction.
Well, that seems...
You know, they'll be definitely... Because even if they don't get a reaction, the mentality is still there, so they'll still continue to be sinful. Okay, trade and money lending are satyanrita. Even by that one may subsist. Service is called svavrita, therefore one should avoid it. It didn't say what satyanvrita was here. 4, 5, 4, 6. Trade and money lending are satyanvrita, so it means half truth, half lie. Right? Because, you know, it means there is elements of truth in business, but there's also elements of lie. You can't tell someone how much it costs you. It just doesn't work as one, because you're a businessman, they'll never believe you. So you might as well not bother with the truth anyway. Right? Like that. So it's just, and whatever it is, like say, if you say, no, but this cost me 100 rupees, they'll say, okay, give it to me for 80. No, but it cost you 100 rupees. So if they want to give it a cost price, then that means, you know, in other words, the businessman, it's either he makes profit or he makes no loss. There's no such thing as he's going to sell something for less than he paid, more less than he paid for it. Then he'll give it to you in charity, because then he'll get the benefit from that. But he's not going to sell it for less. You know what I'm saying? So that's why it's not. It means, in other words, the person has to balance how much he's applying. Right? He may either possess enough to fill a granary, but remember, we're talking here specifically Brahmins. Like that. The principles apply in other places, but Brahman. He may either possess enough to fill a granary, or a store filling a grain jar, or he may collect what suffices for 3 days, or make no provision for the morrow. Right? So a granary will be, you know, like what we have up there, those big golas like that. So that could last them for a year. Right? You know, the pot will last you for, you know, a month or so. Like that. Or he can keep just for 3 days, or just for 1 day. In other words, he goes out and collects. If he gets more than what he requires, he gives that away in charity. Like that. Moreover, amongst these four Brahmin householders, each latter name must be considered more distinguished, and through his virtue to have conquered the world more completely. Right? So it means all of them have conquered the world, but one more completely than the other. Because it means the one who's keeping only for the day, he, or for the 3 days, means that they're just depending upon the Lord. Right? The other ones, of course, they're depending upon the Lord, but there's something more. They're going to have to do yajnas or sacrifice or something like that. There'll be some aspect or element why they would keep more. One of these follows six occupations, means the one who has a grain house. Others subsist by three, right? So you have the big pot. One by two, and the fourth lives by Brahma Sutra. Brahma Sutra means a life dedicated to Brahma. Right? So in other words, he has to use all of them to have that much grain. Otherwise, you're not going to get... But it's by begging or gleaning, you're not going to end up with that much. Okay. He who maintains himself by picking up grains and ears of corn. Corn, whenever it's in this text, because of the style of English, when it means corn, it means grain. You know, like that. Must be always intent on the performance of ten, 11. Somehow or another we didn't get. Should be probably the Agnihotra. And then and constant those that would be what you make small. In other words, there's always in other words, someone who lives like that should be always intent on performing sacrifice. In other words, if you're living a lifestyle that is so non-involved with the world and technically just, you don't have to work much, you just go out and do this thing, then he should be involved in more preaching, more sadhana, these kind of aspects. Not that he does that because he's just lazy. So he doesn't read and study, he just goes out, collects a little from here and there, that wouldn't be proper. Right? The idea is the more it also goes down, the more then you increase. Because he's doing six occupations, so that means more time will be spent. So if you're doing one occupation or two, then you would put in more sadhana. Let him never, for the sake of subsistence, follow the ways of the world. Right? Let him live the pure, straightforward, honest life of a Brahmin. So just to make money and stuff like that, you don't live according to how the materialists live. Right? Those should never be the consideration. You shouldn't do something that will be against the, you know, the Vedic principles and all that. You know, just to make money. Does that make sense? It's not worth it for a Brahmin. He who desires happiness must strive after a perfectly contented disposition and control himself, for happiness has contentment for its root. The root of unhappiness is the contrary. And so, one who wants to be happy, then you have to be contented. Because if you're satisfied, that's the root of happiness. So if you're not satisfied, then you'll never be happy. You know, there'll be that moment you get some of you happy, but then the next moment, then you're thinking all these other aspects. Topic 10. The duties of a snataka. A brahmana who is a snataka and is subsist by one of the above-mentioned modes of life must discharge the following duties which secure heavenly happiness, heavenly bliss, long life, and fame. Okay, so now these are the duties. Before that was the occupation, right? Now the duties. Let him untired perform daily the rites prescribed for him in the Veda, for he performs those according to his ability, attains to the highest state. So what is his duty? He does it the best he can. So it's not how, in other words, what is the quality of how, what result he gets is how good, how well he performs it. You know, it means according to his ability. That's what you're looking for. Not that he, one gets big results, so therefore he's you know, advancing quicker, one gets small results. No, it's to the best of his ability. Right? Whether he be rich or even in distress, let him not seek wealth through pursuits to which men cleave. I mean, so in these things, men cleave or the ways of the world. He's the common person. You know, what they would do just because of their attachment to get things. Nor by forbidden occupations. Right? So, not through attachment, not by forbidden occupations. Nor let him accept presents from any giver, whosoever he may be. Right? So don't just accept gifts from anybody. You know, only those who qualify. Otherwise, if you get something from someone who's not qualified, it should be, you don't use it, you give it away. Yes?
Would that just explain my question?
Yeah, you can't use it for yourself. In other words, if the person who's giving is not qualified, you can use it for maintaining dependence or giving away as part, when you give in charity, that can be used, but you never use it for yourself. Because, see, is that who it's given to is who gets the karma. Right? Who's used, so if he gives it to you, but you don't use it for yourself, then you don't get all that. But you're giving it to someone else that's already purified. So that means your dependents and other Brahmins you give it to won't get the reaction. Yeah, yeah. Well, you always get it. That's why it's only Brahmins do that by an occupation. It means you give something to somebody out of affection, that's a different thing. You know what I'm saying? But if it's the formal ritualistic, you're giving a donation, then they get karma. And if that's why, you know, the rich people give all this money to the poor people don't actually get any better because they're taking on the karma of the rich people. So.
Same for beggars? They're poor already and they're begging?
Maybe. But they, except for that guy with the Mercedes I told you about. He's doing okay. In other words, whether he begged, he did business, he would still have the same facility. The point is that's what he should get. So he's just using begging as the medium. So he's getting lots of money. Because others are begging, they're not getting that much money. You know, like that. So it's just, he would get that much money anyway. You know, it's just it comes through his occupation. So he's taking occupation, begging as his occupation. Okay. Let him not, out of desire for enjoyments, attach himself to any sensual pleasures, and let him carefully obviate an excessive attachment to them by reflecting on their worthlessness in his heart. Right. So he shouldn't be absorbed in the whole idea of sense gratification. It means whatever is your duty, what comes in that line, then that's there, but he shouldn't go out of his way. Like others, the worldly persons, they have money, they have facilities, they use it just for the senses. It's not a duty as such. Does that make sense? You know, but what's part of your normal duty, whatever happiness comes from that's not a problem, because you're doing it as sacrifice. Like that. And if there is something he's overly attached to, then he should be contemplating how it's not so important. Right? So by contemplation, gradually, it weakens the mind's attachment, right? Because the mind, you know, it's attached to something, but it's always that it'll be beneficial. But as you keep pointing out, it's not actually beneficial. The mind slowly starts, but it may not be immediate. You know, it'll take a while, like that. Let him avoid all means of acquiring wealth which impede the study of the Veda. Let him maintain himself anyhow, but study, because that devotion to the Veda study secures the realization of his aims. So, in other words, don't let his natural study of the Veda, you know, his practice of sadhana, get reduced because of his occupation. Find some other occupation or some way of making money, but don't reduce your study like that. Because otherwise, you reduce your study, you have money, but what's the use? You're maintaining, you're studying, so you need to maintain yourself. But if you maintain yourself and don't study, what's the meaning? That's the point. Let him walk here on earth, bringing his dress, speech, and thoughts to conformity with his age, his occupation, his wealth, his sacred learning, and his race. Right? So here, this is an important verse. Means that you dress according to your actual status, right? If you're wealthy, you dress nice. If you're not wealthy, you don't worry about that so much. You know what I'm saying? If it's a big formal program, you dress more, you know, noticeably. If you're a big person, fine. But if you're just a small guy, you don't dress more fancy than the people who are big. So in other words, whatever the occasion, you dress accordingly to what the situation is and what your position is within that. Right, so in other words, let's say here, and his race, he's a Brahmin, so he dresses as a Brahmin. Right, there may be Kshatriyas, this, that, all that, but he dresses as a Brahmin. You know, the Kshatriya, he dresses as a Kshatriya. But let's say it's not a formal occasion, so he'll dress very simply. But it's a big occasion, then he'll dress as a king. Does that make sense? You know, so it should deal with all these different things. You know, or your family tradition. You know, if the tradition, the family dresses in that way, that tradition, then you do like that. His age also. In other words, that means, you know, when you're 60 years old, you don't dress like you're 20. Like that. You know, it doesn't really work. Right? But, I mean, dhoti and chadar, you wear them when you're 20, you wear them now. That works. But it's just the Western, you know, kind of. Okay. Let him daily pore over those institutes of science which soon give increase of wisdom, those which teach the acquisition of wealth, those which are beneficial for other worldly concerns, and likewise over the nigamas which explain the Veda. For the more a man completely studies the institute of science, the more he fully understands them, and his great learning shines brightly. Riti, Yajnavalkya states, for attaining consummate results in recitation and sacrifice, he should study the Vedas, the Puranas, the Itihasas, and the entire body of spiritual sciences, according to his might. In other words, the wide range of the Vedic literature should be studied. But, you know, specifically, your what's dealing with the Vedanta is the most important, right? Because that's the topmost. That's what's Krishna. So your Bhagavatam, so if you just study Bhagavatam, that's all, then that's nice. But the point is, if you're dealing in these other areas, then the more you understand them, the better. Right? Like that. Let him never, if he's able to perform them, neglect the sacrifices to the sages, to the gods, the Buddhas, to men, and the maids. Right? So, how do you say? In other words, one should always be engaged in study, taking care of guests, and something connected with devotional service, you know, something other than your sadhana, some aspect connected with the preaching or expanding the mission, like that. If you do that, then this is taken. In other words, if he's able, never neglect that, right? If you're sick and you can't read or, you know, like that, then you don't. But if you can, you should never neglect them. Some men who know the ordinances for sacrificial rites always offer these great sacrifices in their organs of sensation without any external effort, knowing that the performance of the sacrifice in their speech and their breath yields imperishable rewards. Some always offer their breath in their speech and their speech in their breath. Other Brahmins, seeing with the eyes of knowledge that the performance of those rites has knowledge for its root, always perform them through knowledge alone. Oh, I see. Okay. It's not, I was trying to think, figure out how that was a riti, but it's not. It's just... okay. So, in other words, there's the... You're physically performing them, or you understand the principle of them, so you're always engaged in activities that's connected to that, or you're looking at all these things through knowledge and therefore analyzing these, like what the last chapters of Gita are describing, or 11th canto. So, in some way... your activities of the day are always connected to the Lord. They're always being seen through the eyes of Shastra. Good. Receiving guests. No guest must stay in his house without being honored, according to his ability, with a seat, food, a couch, water, or roots and fruits. Vritti, in his purport to Srimad Bhagavatam 1.18.28, Srila Prabhupada states, the law of reception in the codes of the Vedic principles states that even if an enemy is received at home, he must be received with all respects. He should not be given a chance to understand that he has come into the house of an enemy. When Lord Krishna, accompanied by Arjuna and Bhima, approached Jarasandha in Magadha, the respectable enemies were given a royal reception by King Jarasandha. The guest enemy, namely Bhima, was to fight with Jarasandha, and yet they were given a grand reception. At night they used to sit down together as friends and guests, and in the day they used to fight, risking life and death. That was the law of reception. The reception law enjoins that a poor man who has nothing to offer his guests should be good enough to offer a straw mat for sitting, a glass of water for drinking, send some sweet words. Therefore, to receive a guest, either friend or foe, there is no expense. It is only a question of good manners. Right. Like that. So that's the. So be, means here, without being honored according to his ability, with a seat, food, a couch, water, roots, and fruits. So it can be very simple. Right? You have less, you means that's what you, but you take care. So you also have the element that here, guest will. Now, here in this thing, we're not talking about of the Panchamahayagya. The Panchamahayagya, that Brahmanyahuta means a Brahmin. Right, who's come, he stayed just by occasion, came and stayed one night. But at the same time, then we see by Prasara and Yajnavalkya that it's also means anybody who comes at that time in the evening when a guest would come. Like that. But here it's also being expanded. Anybody who comes to your house should be dealt with nicely. Right, you know, if it's a time of day, you know, sit them down, this and that, give them some water, talk nicely. Like that. And then you find out what they want and what's going on and all that. Let him not honor, even by speech, imposters, men who follow forbidden occupations, men who live like cats, rogues, logicians, arguing against the Veda, and those who live like herons. Right? No sense. You know, cats, heron, you know, the ones with the long legs and the long beak.
Okay.
That's how you know. If the guy comes and he's got a very long beak, and you look down and there's chicken feet, don't let him in.
Good to know.
Yeah, because he's either a heron or he's a, what do you call those things? A jinn.
A jinn?
Yeah. They have chicken feet, that's how you know. They look like a human, but they got chicken feet. You got problems.
Okay.
Vritti, in this verse, people should not be honored or enumerated. Those who live like cats perform religious duties to gain facility and respect, but not because such rites are their prescribed duties. Right? They do it just to get respect. So they'll just go out there. It means it's not. It may be their duty, but they're not performing it because it is their duty. They're only doing it to get respect. Or it might not even be their duty, but they'll want to get involved just to get the respect for it.
It's quite amazing the fact that in those ages they reveal the mentalities of the animals.
Yeah, yeah.
Otherwise we'd have no idea.
Yeah. No, you wouldn't. Yeah, there's so many. They reveal the mood. Later in this chapter, the following verses are found. A man who, ever covetous, displays the flag of virtue, who is a hypocrite, a deceiver of the people, intent on doing injury, and a detractor from the merits of all men, one must know to be one who acts like a cat. Right, so he's always showing the flag of virtue, as I mentioned here. He performs religious duties to gain facility and respect. So that's the flag of virtue. He's a hypocrite because he's not actually doing it for a religious purpose. A deceiver of people. He wants them to think he is religious, right? Intent on doing injury. So this is the other side of it. He's intent on doing injury, so he's trying to make himself better, but that means you make others worse. Right? Detractor from the merits of all. He's done that. Oh, that's just a small thing like that, because if that's small, you're bigger. Right? That's one of the elements of niti, is you reduce someone, you make yourself bigger by reducing someone else, but that's not recommended, but it's common. Like that. He's one who acts like a cat. That Brahman who, with downcast look, of a cruel disposition, is solely intent on attaining his own ends, dishonest and falsely gentle, is one who acts like a heron. Like that. You know, one may not bump into these often, but they're there. So this is the full manifestation. So you might get a partial manifestation. So it's just, in other words, you don't spend any time with such persons, because only by giving them opportunities, they'll take advantage. So you just don't. You're not obliged to. They can say no, but you have to take care of your guests. You have to, like this, but the person who will say like that isn't the one that you should be taking care of. Yeah. Right?
Someone you should be taking care of, he wouldn't say like that.
Yeah, he wouldn't say like that. Or he'll be quoting scripture and that. And it's obvious. Like, I think when Mark and Dan, I think it was Mark and Dan, came to visit Duryodhana, and then they insulted him. So he made a few points, and then he left. You know, but in the, I think he slapped his thigh or something like that, and so then he said, you know, his thigh will be broken. So that's a second time. Bhima said it, and now Markandeya said it. So it's going to happen.
Yeah.
But if these people come to our house, we would still receive them and give them a glass of water and kind words.
Might you have to be very, very careful. In other words, you'd be very formal about it.
Okay.
You have to be careful, because the same son, you know, but it says here, let them not honor even by speech impostors. Yeah, that's true. It says not honor even by speech, but it doesn't necessarily mean that if they come to the house, you wouldn't give them a seat and a glass of water, but you wouldn't be praising them or, you know, dealing in this way. It would just be business, you know, pleasant, but just business. Like that. Because, you know, you also don't want to make them upset, because it says even an enemy shouldn't feel bad. Because if an enemy feels bad, he becomes more inimical and they get more trouble. Okay. Those who have become snatikas after studying the Veda, or after completing their vows, and householders, who are kshatriyas, one must worship by gifts of food, sacred to the gods of mains, but one must avoid those who are otherwise. Right? So, or sacred to the gods of the mains. So the gods means it's nice. So the mains means it's really nice. Right? Because it said the food, you know, in other words, it's more formal for the mains, it's less, you know, for the gods. You know, in other words, you're taking care of them nicely, you know, according to your ability. Right? So those who have, you know, in other words, those who are knowledgeable, those who have studied the Veda and now graduated, or those who are then taking that knowledge and applying it and becoming very, you know, developed in that knowledge, their practice. That's a kshatriya. Right? A householder must give as much food as he is able to spare to those who do not cook for themselves. And to all beings, one must distribute food without detriment to one's own interest. In other words, you can't give away so that you yourself don't have. Right? But that doesn't mean that you don't adjust it, that, you know, it's just how much you need. And then you can give away. But don't give away more than that. You know, in other words, you're not giving to poor people and then your own family's hungry. That wouldn't be proper. A householder should distribute to other living beings both his excess belongings and food. Right? So whatever is, you know, extra, that's what he distributes. Right? So he has to be, if you're not attached, you can understand what is extra. Otherwise, of course, nothing's ever extra. You know? Begging. A snatago pines with hunger, may beg wealth of a king, of one for whom he sacrifices, and not of pupil, but not of others. That is a settled rule. Priti, if his daily occupation of begging from righteous houses fails, right? In other words, he's always begging from, you know, his righteous houses, but if that doesn't work, then he could do these. He is consequently in need. He may then beg from kings, yajamans, or disciples. Otherwise, he wouldn't beg from them. A snatago is able to procure food, shall never waste himself with hunger, nor shall he wear old or dirty clothes if he possesses property. In other words, if you have some facility, you'll use it. You know, it's not that, you know, you won't use it because you want to keep it. Then that's miserly. Otherwise, it's the same as not having it. If you have money but don't use it for necessities, it's as good as not having money. You know, what's the difference? You know, I told you, like that one lady, she didn't want to break her last $1 million fixed deposit. She starved to death. So it's as good as if she had nothing. You know,
it's poor.
Yeah. So that's, yeah. Riti. Okay, we already did that. Okay, we did that. Yeah, so one's not to be a miser because it's your quota, it's been given. So the point is then you're keeping it because you're in control of it. No, so it's a matter of, okay, whatever you have, you keep it, you may keep a small portion of it, but you don't keep a lot of it. You know, you have to, you use it. Otherwise, what's the meaning? So you look like a beggar when you don't need to. Why would you? That's the point. In other words, you dress properly, eat properly. If you have less money, then you don't dress as well and don't eat as well. But if you have more, you eat properly. It's not, how you say, we're not saying a matter of opulence. It's a matter of just, you know, appropriate. You like that. Rules of conduct, personal appearance. Keeping his hair, nails, and beard clipped. Subduing his passions by austerities. Wearing white garments and keeping yourself pure. You shall always engage in studying the Veda. And such acts are conducive to his welfare. Right? So that means the hair, the nails, the beard, they always must be kept proper. It's not that he looks shabby or is dirty, right? Keeping his passions in control, he wears white garments because white infers purity, right? So the standard is white is the color of the grihasthas, right? Like that, personal behavior. Let him never look at the sun when he sets or rises, is eclipsed or reflected in water, or stands in the middle of the sky. Right? In other words, all these are going to be bad for him. Right? When it's eclipsed, reflected in water, stands in the middle of the sky, you can ruin your eyes. Right? And when the sun rises or sets, when that red is there, then the I think it's one of the, forget who it was. But there's somebody that was basically the element of the lust. It was given residence in the red of the sunrise and sunset, like that. That's why do the romantic couples like to watch the sunset, right? They're not watching the sunrise because they're not up, but the sunset, you know, that's famous. You know, so why? Because it actually carries that potency of lust, right? So that's why he doesn't look at it. Now the dham is different because we're not dealing. This is not the sun that's here and the moon that's here is not the one that's outside the dham. It's different. This is all the spirits. It looks the same because you have to remember that, you know, all that is reflected from this. So it's different. So here is not really a problem. But when you're not in the dham, then it's not something to overly get involved in. Okay. Let him not sleep. Okay, now here's going to be, these are personal conduct, personal behavior. Okay, so this is all going to be in these rules of conduct. These are all the different things he should be careful of. Basically speaking, all of them, there's something that's, it's always practical. You know, practical for either purity, for his health, for maintaining relationships properly, all that. But it's just not areas we've necessarily thought about, right? Let him not step over a rope to which a calf is tied, right? Because you don't know, calves aren't known for being stable, right? So at any point, the calf could run or just move. And what happens? Your foot's in the rope? Not good. right? Let him not run when it rains, right? What's going to happen? He could slip and fall. And let him not look at his own image in water. That is a settled rule. Right? It means, what are you going to do by looking at your image in water?
Contemplate.
Yeah, you're just looking and this and that. In other words, if you're putting on tilak or doing something, you need a mirror, then you use it because it goes with the activity. But just to look, just to look. Right? Brahmins don't do that. Right? Let him pass by a mound of earth, a cow, a deity, a Brahmin, clarified butter, honey, or a crossway, and well-known trees, turning his right hand towards them. In other words, anything that's respectable or auspicious, you always pass it with the right side. Right? It means that's like in India, you go down the road on the left, because then you pass everybody with your right side. So that's the standard way of doing it. The people walk that way, cars, everything goes by going on the left side of the road. So who turned it around for, you know, Europe and America? I have no idea, but it's backwards. Because then you're passing everybody on the left, so that's inauspicious. You know, like you have the roundabout, you're supposed to go around it clockwise, because in the middle of it's where a yaksha lives. That's why there's the accidents at crossroads. You know, you never generally hear of accidents at roundabouts. Very rare. Even though you do have people going this way and somebody coming across, but you don't have accidents. But when it's a crossroad, if there's no roundabout, that where it crosses, where the two roads cross, that place is given for yakshas to live. So that's where their hangouts. So I guess for fun, sometimes you have cars crash. You know, it's just one of the things you do. But roundabouts, there's not a problem. So that's the standard. It means if it's a crossroad, it means a little out of the way place and stuff like that. But otherwise, in cities, major crosses, they're always roundabouts. You know, that's the standard. So therefore, all these different things. So a cow, a deity, a Brahmin. Like if there's a temple, you know, you walk to you know, on your left, so your right is facing the temple, right? Brahm, anything like that. Let him, though mad with desire, not approach his wife when her corpses appear, nor let him sleep with her in the same bed. For the wisdom, energy, and strength, the sight, and the vitality of a man who approaches a woman covered with menstrual excretions utterly perish. If he avoids her while he's in that condition, his wisdom, energy, strength, sight, and vitality will increase. Right. So in other words, if he doesn't, they'll decrease. And if he does, they'll increase. Like that. So it's up to you. I mean, it's up to, you know. He's just saying that because most people like their energy, the sight, the vitality, you know, their wisdom. You know, they're generally well-respected qualities. Let him not eat in the company of his wife, nor look at her while she eats, sneezes, yawns, or sits at her ease. Right? Because the element of sensuality is so much more. The man is eating, and it tastes nice and all that, but it's not so much the experience. When they eat, the whole experience of it is very much more. So there's so much more happening. So then, if one's not careful, one could get very distracted by that. So it's a standard that... You know, plus, the women, because the men would be looking, you know, if somebody's looking at you while you're eating, you know what I'm saying? If the wife's there eating and you're eating, you're not looking at her while you're eating. You know, in other words, she's eating, you're just watching her eat. You don't do that. You know, one, she wouldn't like it, you know, and two, what's the point? Does that make sense? You know, has the wife sitting there eating, but they're looking at their own plate and they may talk to each other, but when they talk, they're not eating, right? At least you would hope not. Does this make sense? So in other words, he's not going to just on his own sit there, you know, look at what eats, sneezes, yawns, or like that. So if these things happen, you don't look. You just look away. And then when she stops yawning, then you look back. Like that.
Women on women? Does it
look? No, it doesn't matter. Because women are women, it means it's the same. It means the element of sensuality is just a nature. So it doesn't mean anything. It's just an expression. So women, they don't have any problem with these things. But if men are there, it's just... Because the difficulty is without training, the men can't make a distinction between sensuality and sexuality. So for them, sensuality is sexuality. But for women, it's not at all. Like that. You know, extreme sensuality turns into sexual, but it's two different things. Women can be very sensual. It has nothing to do with sexual. But men can't make this distinction. Therefore, it's recommended he's not involved when the sensuality is increased, you know, or that focus is increased. Like, I'm not sure if it'll come here, but at one point it'll say he shouldn't look at his wife when she's putting on the cudgel. Because when they're putting on cudgel, the intensity of the look is so strong, getting it exact and making it look nice, that it's too much energy. You know, it's just short out some synapses or something. You know, so it's just, these are things that people don't know. They say, I never heard of that. Yeah, but that's the point. That's the glories of being born as a Malecha. You've never heard of these things. So it's just like, you know. Oh, here's the next one. A Brahmin who desires energy must not look at a woman who applies collyrium to her eyes, has anointed or uncovered herself, or brings forth a child. So all these different things, she's put oil in the body, anything like this, then you don't look. It's not that she's there, it's not that you stand there and look. You just, you know, hey, you walk by or whatever it is like this. But we're talking about you don't focus on these things. You focus on these things, you can get distracted. Let him not eat dressed with one garment only. In other words, eating is a sacred rite, so he always has to wear two, right? The dhoti and chadar. Let him not bathe naked, right? The women can bathe naked, little kids can bathe naked, sannyasis can bathe naked, but nobody else can bathe naked, right? I mean, the women, it's because, how you say, Varuna doesn't mind, right? The sannyasis, they don't necessarily have anything anyway. They might live naked anyway. Right? Like that. Little kids, who cares? Right? But grihastha men, then generally naked for them, then it brings on all kinds of... So you just don't get involved. Varuna is a person, is a man. So he doesn't like naked men bathing. Right? But naked women, hey, that's cool. Okay? Somebody says, it's not that he's watching. It just means he doesn't mind. Does that make sense? Because he's still the lord of the water.
Right? Verse says brings forth a child, that means childbirth.
Basically, I would think that that's what that means. In other words, when the childbirth is there, the men aren't supposed to be there. It's a modern thing that the man has to be there. Why does he have to be there? Because it hurts a lot, and he's so insensitive anyway, so the wife just wants him to know how much trouble this was. That's the translation of, you know, the man should be there. Like that. I even mentioned it, and they said, it mentions that if a man is there when the child is born and watches that, it can reduce his lifespan by 50%. And I mentioned this to one lady, and she says, I wouldn't care. Let him, you know, die, you know, half his lifetime, but he should know how much trouble it is and learn to be sensitive and be, you know, it's like that. It's like, you know, what kind of man is he that the woman would say that, and two, what kind of woman would say that? So it's like, you know, it's like... Yeah, so these are, you know, these are human considerations. Right, so that's it. It's the women's thing. They get involved. They know what to do. Let them not bathe naked. Let them not void urine on a road, on ashes, or in a cow pen. Right, because on a road, people walk there. Right? Like that. On ashes, because the ashes are fire, so fire is respected. There may still be fire there and anyway. And people sometimes use ashes for cleaning and stuff like that. Or in a cow pen, because then the cows will step on, and cows are respectable. So as we said, you always turn your right side to a cow. Right? And even when you're in the goshala, you wear your chadar on your arm, as if, like, when you're in the company of Brahmins or deities or doing a sacred rite.
Is this something that... passing urine on their earth as well?
That comes out. That's more. We'll see here. That's more Sanatana Goswami nonsense. Nor on plowed land, right? If it's unplowed, that's another thing. Because then, you know, but once it's plowed, it means people are going to be working with it, right? You know, and then you may make things impure. Like the plants are just growing, and then it becomes impure, right? Nor on plowed land in water, because you contaminate the water. On an altar of bricks, that doesn't mean the water in the toilet. That means the water that's, you know, the source and moving and all that. But it's still not ideal.
You know. You're supposed to be 300 meters from a river? Something that's...
I'm not sure. We'd have to see what comes up. On an altar of bricks, because, you know, then that's for a sacrifice. On a mountain, right, because then it runs downhill, right? On the ruins of a temple, right? Or even on an anthill, right? Because the dirt from an anthill is one of the things that you collect for doing yagyas. When you're doing these big yagyas or abhishekas or installations, you need mud from an anthill. So therefore, if someone passes urine on it, you contaminate it. Plus, the ants don't like it. They make them out and bite you. So, I mean, it's just also practical.
But sometimes the dogs and other things urinate on you.
That's another thing. That's their business. That's not ours. So if you know that, then you don't use the mud from that anthill. You use the next one. So all these things are, you know, purified, related to the worship, right? Nor in holes inhabited by living creatures, right? They just don't appreciate it. Strange, but, you know, they just don't like it. Nor while he walks or stands, right? You have to be crouched. Nor on reaching the bank of a river, right? So right there, because people will come there, take their bath. So you have to be some distance from there. Right? In other words, the area where people are going to put their clothes, they're going to sit and all these things or do things next to the river, you have to be farther away than that. Nor on the top of a mountain, right? Because people do come to the top of the mountain, so that's their plus, and will run down on all sides. So then becomes contaminated. Riti. Holes inhabited by living creatures should be avoided so as not to cause inconvenience to others. Means there. According to Ayurveda, if one passes urine standing, a minute amount of semen is lost in the process. Therefore, one should not urinate while standing or walking. The bank of a river and the top of a mountain are both pure places and are frequented by others. Therefore, they must be avoided for micturition. What's micturition?
Micturition.
Oh, micturition. Wow. Impressive. I like it. Okay. Also, the top of a mountain, the banks of the river, these are also used in these big sacrifices. You need mud from two sides of a river. So that takes, to go down to the side you're on, okay, that's easy. To get it from both sides, that takes an endeavor, right? To get mud from the top of a mountain means you have to climb up it to get it, right? So all these things, so it's mentioned, many of them are either you're bothering other living entities, causing inconvenience, you know, causing impurity, you know, or is it going to disturb the sacrifice? Let him never void feces or urine facing the wind or a fire. Or looking towards a Brahman, the sun, water, or cows. Because facing the wind means the aromas go downwind. Mm. Right. Like that. And then all these others, they're all respected. Fire, Brahman, sun, water, cows, then these are. He may ease himself, having covered the ground with sticks, claws, leaves, grass, and the like, restraining his speech, keeping himself pure, wrapping his body and covering his head. This is out of respect for the earth and to avoid attention. Right? So this is then where your point comes in. So in other words, because the earth is booming, right? There's something dry, dead, this is not. So then that's okay. Let him void feces and urine in the daytime, turning to the north, at night towards the south, during the two twilights in the same position as by day. So this is in consideration of Kuvera and Yamaraj. Right? One's the lord of death, one's the lord of money. You don't want to bother either of them. Right? But if you're using a toilet inside, like in the building, this is for when you're outside. If you're inside, you know, then it's a room, it doesn't matter what direction it is. Right?
Well, two things, right?
That, or you have two toilets, one faces each direction. You know, the day one, you put a moon on one, the sun on the other, like that. So you know which is which, you know, like that. In the shade or in darkness, a Brahman may both day and at night do it, assuming any position he pleases. Likewise, when his life is in danger, the intellect of a man who voids urine against the fire, the sun, the moon, in water against a Brahman, a cow, or the wind perishes. Right, so your intelligence will be lost. Let him not blow a fire with his mouth. This is also, you see all these things of purity or respect. Let him not blow a fire with his mouth, right? So you have to blow through the hand or through a pipe. You don't blow directly. Let him not look at a naked woman. Let him not throw any impure substance into the fire. and let him not warm his feet at it. Because if it's respectful, you don't sit and stick your feet out and all those things like that. You can sit near the fire and that way become warm. But you don't sit there and, you know, stick your feet out and take your shoes off. You know, the whole... Yeah, you'd avoid that.
That's a general thing with the pointing of the feet, right?
Yeah. It's just the feet are just not pointed. But respectable. Vriti, regards to not looking at a naked woman, we may refer to Srimad Bhagavatam 7.12.19. Woman is compared to fire and man is compared to butter, a butter pot. Therefore, a man should avoid associating with his own daughter in a secluded place. Similarly, he should also avoid associating with other women. One should not associate with women for... One should associate with women only for important business and not otherwise. So important means what's necessary. You know, maybe, you know, how you say... The woman is emotionally disturbed, so you're taking care, giving attention, but that's important. You know what I'm saying? In other words, you're not just hanging out just to hang out because you like to be with women. That's not the point. There's a purpose to it. Right? Does that make sense? It comes up anyway, naturally. That's also the other aspect, is that in the, you know, earlier stages, the more kind of in that, how you say, romantic window, then there may be more time spent. But once the relationship is established and one is comfortable, then it's only if there is some important element, then the woman even wants the men around. If not, then they'll say, you know, go away, do something else. They'll go into their room. So all these kind of things. Does that make sense? So anyway, women only like men around if it's important, right? So important can mean there's actually something getting done, or there's actually an experience that needs to be there, or something emotional of that. So it means, in other words, there's some substance in the interaction. It's not that you're just sitting there because you like to be around the ladies. Like that. Ladies don't like men who just like to be around the ladies and aren't doing anything. Like that. Anyway. So in the beginning, like I said, they may tolerate it. You know? Because it's new, it's something like this. But afterwards, they don't. So it's just, in other words, get used to it now, and then the mood will stay nicer for longer. Like that. Otherwise, if you take a candle and burn it at both ends, it goes out quicker. Right? It only burns so long, so be smart. Purport. If a butter pot and fire are kept together, the butter within the pot will certainly melt. Woman is compared to fire, and a man is compared to a butter pot. However advanced one may be in restraining the senses, it is almost impossible for a man to keep himself controlled in the presence of a woman, even if she is his own daughter, mother, or sister. Indeed, his mind is agitated, even if one is in the renounced order of life. Therefore, Vedic civilization carefully restricts mingling between men and women. If one cannot understand the basic principle of restraining association between man and woman, he is to be considered an animal. That is the purport of this verse. So it's not like, well, you know, we don't do like that. So of course, animals don't do like that. So it's like, does this make sense? You know, it's just the consideration. One has to be very careful. Like that. So in other words, the situations are proper and all that, then everything works very nicely. You know what's going on, you know what you're doing, then everything functions nicely. But if not, then there can always be trouble. Does that make sense? So in other words, he should be aware that it's not just hanging out just to hang out. There's a purpose. Right? You know, the person's disturbed, so you're spending some time, you know, or you've been away some time, so you're spending time. There's a purpose. But if there's no purpose, then what's the mind going to do with it? Right? If you have a purpose, then the mind is busy with that purpose. But if there's no purpose, so what's the mind going to do? It's going to think of options for sense gratification. So that's why it says it's dangerous. Does that make sense? So but if we understand the duties towards the women, the grihastha, then there's so much time he should be spending with them that he's probably not. Because there is a purpose. And then there's times where he wants to spend with them where there is no purpose. So in other words, he must be aware of what is the nature and what his duties are, so he's spending the proper time when it should be, and when it shouldn't, then he's avoiding that. Does this make sense? No?
Yeah.
Let him not place fire under a bed or the like. right? You don't put it in like that. It means we don't do this so much, but you have, and some of the your cultures that are farther north, like they put have ways they put keep coals in that in a box and put it in the bed at your feet and stuff like that. So you don't do stuff like that. You know, in other words, you know, have some other arrangement. Or I think it's they have these in Russia that is huge. You have this amazing way that you have a small fire. The fireplace is actually only this big. But the chimney, they do it in Hungary also. The chimney goes through, they have these special bricks and they build it, it goes out and it just goes around the whole thing. So by the time it actually comes out, it's actually cold air. There is no more heat. So it goes into these stones, and some of them are really big. You have the fire, and then it goes into these flat areas, and they sleep on them and everything like that. Does that make sense? So one wouldn't do that as the normal course of events. Maybe if you're up there where it's 50 below zero, then, you know, you might get by because it's otherwise, you know, you wouldn't be able to follow any of the other rules because you would be a block of ice. You know, you'd be like one of those mammoths they find after so many thousand years like that. Does that make sense? So this is not standard. You would find another way of keeping yourself warm. Another way you could look at it maybe is, are you saying? That maybe you could only put the electric blanket on top of you, not underneath you. Nor step over it. Don't step over fire. Nor place it when he sleeps at the foot end of his bed. Right? It can be on the side, it can be on the head, but not at the foot. Right? Let him not torment living creatures. Right? So it means you're not bothering them with fire. Because all this is about fire. Right, because sometimes, you know, kids get fire and then like to poke it in the holes and bother the living, you know, the things there, or build fire in front of their place so they can't get out, you know, stuff like that.
Magnifying glass,
yeah, magnifying glass on ants, yeah, stuff like that. That would be probably a similar kind of. Let him not eat nor travel nor sleep during the twilight. Let him not scratch the ground. Let him not take off his garland. Out of respect for Lord Shiva, one should not eat, travel, or sleep during the twilight. So if it's you have an option, you can stop. If you're on a train, it's not going to work. You can't pull the red thing and all that while everybody runs around and all that, whatever it is like that. And then, you know, by the time that finishes and the train starts again, the twilight's over. No, you don't do that. It just means if you have an option to not, you do that. Like that. And especially you wouldn't start at that time. You know, you start before or after. Nor let him not scratch the ground, because his scratching is no purpose. It'll be mentioned later is that the Brahmin doesn't do something useless, so he doesn't sit there and scratch the ground and do stupid stuff or like that. Nor let him take off his garland, because the, how do you say, means that's the garland he's wearing or something for that, he doesn't take it off. Let's say you're doing the class, Bhagavatam, they give you a garland, you don't take that off. It means that's part of the thing, yeah. You know, unless it's soaking wet, then better you don't put it on. Let him not throw urine or feces into water, nor saliva, nor clothes defiled by impure substances, nor any other impurity, nor blood, nor poisonous things. In other words, nothing not nice should be thrown into water.
That refers to moving water. Sometimes if you have like a scratch or something, you wash it, you know, with water and soap.
But but where would that be? What do you mean by that?
Generally in the bathroom, but
yeah, but that's another thing. No, but if you're outside, then you're supposed to take water out of that and then go to some other place and then you can wash. You know, just like you want to brush your teeth and rinse your mouth, you take water out, then go somewhere and brush your teeth, rinse like that. You know, you don't wash your mouth into the. Does that make sense? No. Let him not sleep alone in a deserted dwelling, right? Because a deserted dwelling generally collects all kinds of either animals or strange people, right? Let him not wake a superior who is sleeping, right? Unless he's been told to, but otherwise he don't. Let him not converse with a menstruating woman nor let him go to a sacrifice if he is not chosen to be officiating priest. In other words, don't just show up and just, you know, there and expect that, you know, because you're the Brahmin, that you'll get something out of it. No, if you're not, basic point is, if you're not invited, you don't go. If you're invited to something, you go. If you're not invited, you don't go. Brahmins just don't crash parties. Because if you crash a party and they don't take care of you or like that, that would be wrong for the guests. So now you've caused their misfortune. So because you've caused it, you'll share in it. Like that. Okay, here, some translate the prohibition against waking a superior to one shall not offer advice to a superior, because that's also, he's doing something wrong, you don't wake him up, you know, like that. If one is not chosen as an officiating priest, he may not go to a sacrifice, he may go to a sacrifice to observe, but should remain aloof, right? So he may go as a sadhya, you know, if it's there, but still, it's a risk. But, you know, like that, he's a sadhya. But he's not going to tell... He's not going to tell everybody to do this or that's wrong or no. You know, so in other words, if you can't keep your mouth shut, don't go. Right? And don't go unless you're sure that you'll be, you know, respected for going. Let him keep his right arm uncovered in a place where a sacred fire is kept, in a cow pen, in the presence of Brahmins, during the private recitation of the Vedas and at meals. Right, so that's the proper, because then the right arm, one is out of respect, humility, because the right arm and the neck is shown, and it is also, then you can do service. Sacred fire, you're doing service. You know, cow pen, you'll be able to deal. Presence of Brahmins, respect is service. Private recitation of the Vedas, you know, when you're eating, you know, because if you're all covered up like that, and then you eat, and then if the cheddar falls off, then, you know, it falls on your plate, not good. Right, so it's under the arm, so then the arm is free. Let him not interrupt. So that's why this style of wearing the chadar is standard in Brahminical culture. Right? Like let him not interrupt a cow who is suckling her calf, nor tell anybody of it. Because if you go, oh, hey, look, like that, and then you point and you look, the cow notices. Because she's very protective, and then she might get upset and like this and that, and then the cow, it won't work nicely between them. So you see something like that, you don't tell anybody else. It's just the way it is. If they see, nice, but you don't tell someone else. Because if you notice there's something like that, that's one thing. But if you start, people get together and there's a crowd and they're pointing, then the cow will get disturbed. A wise man, if he sees a rainbow in the sky, must not point it out to anybody. Right? It's an omen. Like that, if he sees it, means who the omen is for, they'll see it. If it's not for you, you won't see it. So therefore, you don't point it out. Because if you point it out, then the benefit is there. You know, would be dissipated. Right? So you just don't point it out.
Does that include if afterwards, like, if there was a, you know, an auspicious occasion, and then there was a good omen, then, you know, in retelling...
You can retell it. Means pointing it out means at the time you point to somebody, oh, hey, a rainbow. Like that. If you're sitting there and then the conversation comes up or everybody can see it, then you can talk about it. But it's just you don't point it out. Let him not dwell in a village where the sacred law is not obeyed, nor stay long where diseases are endemic. Nor let him go alone on a journey, nor reside long on a mountain. So all these places are going to be dangerous in some way or another. Right? It means either bad association, you get sick, you know, physical harm, or, you know, all these different things. Let him not dwell in a country where the rulers are Shudras, nor in one which is surrounded by unrighteous men, nor in one which has become subject to heretics, no one swarming with men of the lowest castes. So these also are, Chanakya mentions these, you know, his niti. Because these are just practical, you know, if you don't follow them, then you have problems.
Right? Excludes quite a big part of the West, doesn't it?
Well, it also mentions where the black buck doesn't roam, then it's not fit for living. Or I think, I've been told one scripture mentions, you know, after the point where coconut trees grow, farther north than that's not fit for living.
I've always wondered why people would settle in Scandinavia.
Probably because all the other good places are taken.
Yeah,
like that. And they were stronger. Because you notice as soon as there was some opportunity, the Scandinavians came down as far as Italy. It means the Visigoths are Scandinavians, you know. So they came down and they actually conquered Rome. You know, that was the end of the Western Roman Empire. Like that. So the end of it came by those coming down from there. So it appears that they didn't come down only because the guys on the other side of the lake there were a bit more strong, you know, like that. Let them not eat anything from which the oil has been extracted. I mean, other than when they squeeze things for oil. I'm just trying to think of what would be something that oil's been extracted.
Low-fat food.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Skim milk. This would be law. I mean, there is a law. Adding these things.
Solid protein is also part of the process, is they extract the oil and then the remnants, they're making the sort of protein cakes and use it for feeding animals. And
yeah, well, it's okay for animals. It's not for humans. Like that. It doesn't say that the oil that's been extracted you can't use.
No.
Yeah. Let him not be a glutton. Let him not eat very early in the morning. Right? So you don't get up first thing out of bed and start eating. Of course, unless first thing out of bed is about 10 in the morning, then. Nor very late in the evening, right? Because then it's hard for digestion. That means early in the morning is supposed to be for sodden, and late in the evening it'll be hard to digest. You won't sleep properly, the next day it'll be a problem. Nor take any food in the evening, if he has eaten his fill in the morning. Right? In other words, if you're already full, don't eat again in the evening. But if you haven't, you know, in other words, if there's been a big gap, then you might eat in the evening. But otherwise, you've eaten lunch full, if you're resting early, that's one thing. If you're resting late, then there might be another meal. Let him not exert himself without a purpose. Let him not drink water out of his joined palms. Right? You drink from one hand, not both. Let him not eat food placed in his lap. You know, so you don't take the thing, put it on your lap, and then eat. You know, you hold it. Better is it's on the ground, but it means it's on, you know, then if you had it, hold it in your hand. You don't put it down on your lap. Because then everything becomes contaminated. Your clothes, everything.
Is that when you get maha pashadam sometimes, and you get a bit of maha, you meant to just eat it like that, or would you put it like this?
However you eat it, saying don't put it on your lap.
Yeah.
Because if you put it on your lap, then your lap gets contaminated.
But is it not offensive to put the Mahabhashad in your left hand?
Well, that's a different rule.
Okay.
So that's something else. You know, because that's the point of not drinking water with the left, of joined palms, because the left hand is considered impure. You know, but you do what you can. In other words, if it's, you know, whatever's going to work. Like that. Okay. I guess we should just end there. Otherwise, everything gets. Okay.
Om Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama.
Some of it, I've got to keep.